RCR with Paul Brennan, Reality Check Radio.
David Bell, and you know that name by now here at RCR, is a senior scholar at Brownstone Institute, public health physician and biotech consultant in global health, former medical officer and scientist at the World Health Organization, the WHO, program head for malaria and febrile diseases at the Foundation for Innovative New Diagnostics in Geneva, Switzerland, of course, and director of global health technologies at Intellectual Ventures Global Good Fund in Washington State, USA. And it's my pleasure to have David back with us at RCR. Last time we met in person, and that was a really great experience. We had a fun time.
In Auckland, yeah, that was nice.
Yeah, yeah.
Enjoyed it.
And it was great to attend the WHO and you event that we put on that you were here for, along with Ramesh Thakur. So, again, thank you for coming on all that way for that, for us.
First time in New Zealand, I'm ashamed to say, but hopefully not the last. Yeah.
Okay, so a couple of sort of points I want to go through with you in this chat. I want to talk about bird flu, and I want to get an idea from you also what it's like to work for the WHO. Maybe we'll leave that till after the bird flu chat, because it seems to me that the on-ramp to bird flu is well and truly, or is in construction right now. Is that how you see it?
They're trying very hard, to drum up fear, et cetera, and, make this the next COVID, I think.
Yeah, because they need, because this is a business model in the end, right?
It is a business model, yeah. It's a model where you either through fear or through mandates, you force a market for a commodity, a vaccine. You produce a vaccine with public money, and then reap literally hundreds of billions of dollars of private profit off it. It's an unbeatable business case. It worked with COVID, and it's hard to imagine people then walking away and not wanting to do it incessantly.
Your piece in Brownstone a few weeks ago starts with you talking about the 59-year-old man who died in Mexico in April. And we've heard about that. It's been reported here. What do we know about that?
Yeah, so he died of H5N2 strain, which is different than the one that's mostly circulating with H5N1. He's a man who had, and we know because the Secretary of Health in Mexico said he had chronic renal failure. He'd been bedbound for a few weeks, had diabetes. Apparently he was overweight as well. So, and he was late 50s, I think, 59 or something, but very unwell, 59. And he died in hospital after a few days. A month later, one sample that they'd taken, they tested it for influenza and then characterized that as this bird flu, H5N2. And WHO came out and said this is the first recorded. One man dies in Mexico with renal failure with diabetes. So you have to understand that. And the World Health Organization in Geneva puts out a public press release saying this is the first death from H5N2 influenza, bird flu, which the Mexico Secretary of Health then refuted and said, no, he died of renal failure and diabetes and complications of that. And he happened to have a test that came up positive, which may be a true positive, may be a false positive. It may have been a contaminant. We don't know. But it was a month later and it's one sample. But even if it was, it seems almost essentially incidental to the unfortunate man's death. And so it is hard to imagine why an international organization that has, 1.3 million deaths a year of tuberculosis to deal with, or 500,000 dead children a year, would put out a press release on something like that.
Unless they were ready to pounce.
Unless they were very interested in creating a global fear about bird flu. And, I assume it's the same in New Zealand. We're seeing in the US, now that we have genetic sequencing and, PCR tests are ubiquitous, we can test everything. So people are funded to do this. The people doing these tests, they're not, people who are desperately devoting their whole lives to saving humanity, they may have good intent, but they're doing a job. They're doing what someone pays for. So if someone says, we're going to pay for you to do PCR on milk or raccoons or possums or whatever, to see if you can find some genome from a bird flu virus, influenza virus, then they'll go and do it because that's what they paid for. And sometimes they'll find it because this is ubiquitous in wild birds, and wild birds are everywhere, especially, you know, ducks, etc. So, and they poop everywhere and they mix with animals. And, you know, sometimes animals will become infected temporarily with this. Some cows have been here. And you can either just accept that that's nature, or you can say, because we can test for it, we should panic on the test results and, you know, lock everyone down, design a vaccine, et cetera, which is, I think, the way, well, certainly we're designing a vaccine. Fine, if you hold that in reserve for the, you know, we haven't had a major influenza outbreak, a really big one, since the Spanish flu over 100 years ago.
Yeah.
And most people died then because we didn't have antibiotics for their secondary bacterial infections. So to say that there's an existential threat now is, you know, on a historical basis, it's ludicrous.
No one ever makes the point about the secondary infections. I mean, it's obvious, isn't it, that penicillin didn't exist back then. I mean, that's a crucial part of the information package when it comes to referencing that as the last big scary thing.
And Anthony Fauci has written a paper on this several years ago, pointing it out.
Okay.
So for those who doubt.
Was COVID-19 gain of function? Are we sure about that?
We're not sure, but it's highly likely. You know, there's a paper trail of gain of function research starting in the US and being transferred, at least the techniques, if not the materials, to Wuhan Institute of Virology. And it's very similar viruses, bat viruses, coronaviruses of very similar genetic type. And there are insertions in the genome of SARS-CoV-2, the COVID virus, which are very unusual. People talk about furin cleavage site, which allows it to invade human cells. And it seems extremely, extremely unlikely that that would happen in the wild. You know, that in biology, nothing is 100%, you know, with rare exceptions. But there's a very strong paper trail. You know, the FBI and some other security services here have said it's a significant possibility. They were doing the research that were trying to do that. They were trying to make a virus do what it did.
And the motivation for that, not so much to, I guess, well, you'll tell me, harm people with the virus, but to make it transmissible easily. And that's where you can get everything rolling, is it? It's the transmissibility.
Yes, in another species, in humans, rather than bats.
So, yeah, in us.
So,
yeah.
Yes. So they will claim, and their justification, and in many cases it will be genuine, is that in theoretically this could happen in the wild. It may have happened with the first SARS, and therefore we should mimic it in the laboratory so that we can see what they'll look like. And then we could design a vaccine against it. So we'll have the vaccine ready when it happens. You know, there's a few problems with that. One is it's an extremely rare event. We haven't had a massive coronavirus outbreak that we know of in history. We've only been able to distinguish coronaviruses for 40, 50 years, but there's no reason, you know, if you look back, we're pretty sure bubonic plague, et cetera, you know, the Black Death in Europe, they were probably due to Yersinia pestis, the plague bacteria. We have fair ideas of other past events. Then you get to, you know, we had outbreaks of typhus, et cetera, pandemics in the 17th, 18th, 19th centuries, cholera. and smallpox. Nothing that looks like coronavirus on a massive scale. And, you know, the first SARS outbreak was 800 people in total when the whole world died. So, you know, it was bad for those people, but it's a few hours of tuberculosis. It's tiny. So they're preparing for extremely rare events. They're doing this in labs, for instance, in Wuhan Institute of Virology that was funded to do this, that they knew had problems with its security. And even the best labs occasionally will have accidents. And, okay, you design your vaccine and then, you know, a natural spillover somewhere happens, but it'll be a slightly different virus and your vaccine may not work anyway. So, you know, if you add up all the risks of this compared to the theoretical, very highly unlikely but theoretically possible gain, then it makes no sense at all. But people do it because they're paid to do it.
In the end, it's follow the money, isn't it?
Yeah. So why are people paying for this? That's another question. You know, you could speculate from a national security point of view that, you know, if you're worried that this country will do it, then you want to do it in your lab so that you can be ready for it. You know what's going to happen when it, you know, they
mutually assured destruction
through viruses. Exactly. Yeah. And that could be where we are with this sort of game that's going on.
The opportunity of influenza, that's another thing that you talk about in this piece. So we can see, I mean, if we look back, we can see the opportunity. It's pretty obvious of COVID. Same sort of opportunity, isn't it? It says wash, rinse, repeat.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, it's similar virus spread by aerosols. That we know that masks don't work. We know absolutely that community masking and influenza doesn't work. There's review after review on this, including from the CDC in 2020. But they all insist on wearing masks. They insist on lockdown, social distancing, et cetera, antisocial distancing, even though there is no evidence that any of these significantly made a difference. And there's overwhelming evidence now that they made no significant difference. But that is not influencing the narrative. It's not influencing policy at the moment. So it's not an evidence-based policy that we're doing.
Well, I'm seeing people walking around in our streets with masks on again.
Yeah.
Like, hello.
Yeah, it doesn't help. It's hard to convince someone it doesn't help. And, you know, if they really feel they want to, they feel better that way. I mean, it's, in a way, it's their problem. Let them do it. But telling other people to do something that we know it has no evidence base is a completely different thing.
So when do you think the declaration of a bird flu pandemic will come? How far off is it, do you think?
I don't know. That they need, I mean, you can speculate that there are reasons why they want, you know, it would be convenient in terms of the WHO and World Bank, et cetera, getting their pandemic agenda through the pandemic agreement. The treaty has been put off 12 months. Some people who will make money out of that agreement, it would be in their interest to have another pandemic beforehand, because that will help the momentum to get what they want out of this agreement that's been
put. They can say, see, told you so. Told you so.
Yeah. There's also a big election coming up in the US. There's elections elsewhere. People argue that if you stop people voting in person, that it may make a difference to the outcome. So that there are various reasons why it would be convenient for people who gained from COVID to have another one, apart from just the straight profit that they will make. So, and there seems, you know, there's a slightly insane concentration on this at the moment. So clearly they're trying to get the public worried. I'm not sure it's working. You know, you may see some people with masks, but I think, you know, even in this country, the US, different parts are very different, but where I am here, no one's talking about it. I don't think people would buy it like they did last time.
In Australia, they're talking about it. I've seen footage from their main news networks of, you know, hazmat suited people and emergency, you know, crisis vehicles with aerials sticking out of them, and they're walking through chicken farms and obviously relentlessly testing. And that's getting quite a bit of coverage and long pieces too, not just a soundbite, long kind of pieces. So that's happening in Australia, not happening here though.
Yet. It is, but the during COVID, the propaganda in Australia was particularly unusually intense. And I think that's continuing. Australia has a real problem with that. The other issue that could bring it on is people doing gain-of-function research on influenza viruses. So it's also not out of the question that we would end up with a lab-modified influenza virus, unfortunately.
Leaking out again.
Leaking out again, yeah. Of course that can happen, because if you're doing, if you're filling with viruses in labs, the viruses can escape.
Yeah, because they're so small, right? Is there any crack?
And people have accidents. We're humans, and humans make mistakes. And no security system, and there are some very good labs out there, but no security system is absolutely foolproof. And a lot of the labs, as we knew from Wuhan, because the US consulate in Wuhan had actually written a report on the poor safety or the poor biosafety in the lab, you know, before 2020. So we know that there are labs out there that are not of the standard that they should be as well.
I keep having sort of playbacks in my head of that old 70s series Survivor. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
Where the guy drops the test tube of something in the lab, and the next thing you know, everyone's falling over dead, and everything changes.
Yeah, the thing to remember is that that's never happened in human history. Like, there has never been a virus like that. So, with some exceptions. So smallpox was somewhat like that, and measles in, so the Pacific Islands, particularly Hawaii in the Americas. Now, that was because they were viruses that were throughout Eurasia and Africa, and we had genetically some resistance to them. But there were the people in the Pacific Islands, in Australia and in the Americas, had no exposure at all for thousands of years. And so, they were absolutely devastating. But that is a situation where you have a pretty normal virus with a completely, with a population that for thousands of years has been out of touch with that virus. And now that doesn't happen anymore. There is nowhere in the world that is in that situation. And we have all had contact with coronaviruses. It may not be a particular one, but there is cross, for instance, there is cross immunity between coronaviruses, et cetera. So we, a new variant will make you sicker than the old variant, perhaps. Or it may not, but it may. But it is not going to be like a new smallpox or like an airborne Ebola.
There's been big publicity recently for the flu vaccine, the annual flu vaccine. That's always just a running behind what's already happened, isn't it? People are getting sick from it too, because they're getting the flu right after the getting it. You can never stay ahead of this, can you? Because you've got to wait.
No, you can't, because seasonal flu is slightly different every year. So influenza has this particular propensity to change its genome, recombine, etc. And they have to wait. You get a new seasonal variant every year, breaks out often in southern China or that area. They have to wait till it happens, and then they can make a vaccine, and they're generally fairly quick. But you may get the flu before you get the vaccine. If you look at the CDC website, they have a lot of detail on the efficacy of influenza vaccine. So I think over the last 25 years, they come out at about 20 to 30% efficacy.
Yeah, well, that's, it's pretty low if you want to feel secure
about
taking it.
Pretty low for a vaccine, yes. It's normally, a vaccine has to be at least 50% to be useful. But
I want to go through what we can kind of expect to see happen here. Again, referencing your piece at Brownstone. Traces of genome and even whole viruses can be found in raw agricultural produce. raw agricultural produce, I mean, that rings alarm bells because that goes to the baseline of our food supply. So that's going to freak people out, isn't it?
Yes. And, gee, if I had a big investment in fake meat, I would be pretty happy with that scenario. Or yeah, fake eggs or fake milk.
Fake eggs?
There are fake eggs, yes. There's fake eggs and fake milk now, yes. Which is interesting because what they actually are is very, very highly processed foods, largely based on seed oils, which are essentially a quite unnatural food for humans.
Yeah. So there'll be what? A lot of testing. There'll be a storm of testing, won't there? And that will be relentlessly reported. Like I mentioned, the Aussie example, chicken farms, other farms, cattle farms. Like I say, that's going to scare people because that's what they buy at the supermarket.
It is. And then there'll be culling of chickens, or there is already, and culling potentially of cattle. So that will put food prices up and create more of a scare. And, yeah, I mentioned that article. In Britain, you have to, if you have one chicken in your backyard in the United Kingdom, the new law is that you have to register it with the government.
Yeah.
So I think other countries will follow that. And any food that you're growing yourself, you'll have to register with the government. And you can see the scenario with bird flu, and this is speculating now, but you can see the scenario where it'll be, they'll use the same techniques that they used during COVID. They'll say that people who don't toe the line are a threat to the community, and a lot of people will buy that. And, it's a sort of fascist.
They'll be snitching on chicken owners.
Yeah, so snitching on chicken owners. Chickens will have to be vaccinated or culled, and then the chicken owners, quite likely, you can imagine a scenario where they will have to be vaccinated to protect the rest of the community. It'll be an mRNA vaccine, probably, et cetera, eventually. And then, you may have mass vaccination of the whole community and you'll have mandates, et cetera, and we'll go down the same road. And it'll be said that, okay, we made some mistakes with COVID, but this time it's much worse. We're already seeing headlines here of some expert says it could be 25% mortality, 50% mortality.
That'll work.
It'll work with a lot of people.
Yeah. Then you'll get the modelling. Bring in the modellers.
Yes. And they'll do what they did last time, which will work as well. And then you'll have the politicians stuck because the media is completely on board with this, partly because they're paid by the pharmaceutical companies. So if the politicians do nothing, if they don't lock you down, then there will be some influenza deaths and they will be blamed on those politicians and they will have blood on their hands in the headlines across the newspapers.
Chicken blood on their hands. I wonder, I'm going to ask you this, for the animals involved, I mean, is it a big deal that they get, bird flu influenza? I mean, it doesn't kill every chicken, does it?
Doesn't kill every chicken. It can kill most of them. But it's a really interesting question. Yeah, should you cull chickens or should you let them, let nature take its course and then you'll end up with more resilient chickens? The way we farm now, generally you don't breed your own chickens. If you were, that would make sense. But I think now it's sort of industrial and you get your chicks from an industrial chick breeding place. But certainly if you're doing it at home, you're better off, and you're breeding your own, you're better off having chickens that, it's natural selection. If you don't do this, you'll end up with much more susceptible chicken breeds. If you allow nature to take its course, you end up with more resilient ones, which is what has happened to human populations over thousands of years, as we're discussing with measles and smallpox.
Mm. As far as that, you mentioned UK, it's a £5,000 fine or 6 months in chicken for not registering a chicken, by the way.
6 months in prison. Yeah, it's
up to.
Yeah, it's pretty insane, isn't it? Once we would have thought shock horror, but now sort of seems normal for governments to do that somehow. Totally disproportionate responses in health.
So pharma, as the industry, is sitting there rubbing its hands, ready to go. What do we do? What do we just not comply? I mean, what do we do?
I think so, yeah. Use common sense and support politicians in particular who are trying to stand against this, because there's not many, but there are some.
Yeah.
And, yeah, they're in a difficult position because once in a millennium, you know, once in a thousand years, you might have a bad outbreak. It's not going to be 25% mortality or 50% mortality or anything like that. It might be another Spanish flu, but this time we'll have antibiotics, so the mortality will be much, much lower. But it won't be zero. But if you do all the things that we did in COVID, we will destroy our economies even further. That will have big impacts on health. We won't be able to run our health systems. We will have an increase in substance abuse, an increase in cancer, an increase in all the diseases of poverty. We will be diverting money from the other big killers in the world, you know, heart disease, diabetes, tuberculosis, malaria in other countries. And we seem to forget this. The public health community seems to have completely lost touch with what actually kills people and what stops people overall from dying, which is not vaccines. They can help, but it is nutrition, good living conditions, actually lack of stress, sanitation, and a good economy. That's what makes people live longer.
Yeah. We're not going to get any of those if we go the same way.
No, we will get a negative on all of those. And that's what people have to grasp, I think, that they have to remember that the world is not defined by a particular chicken virus or something like that, that there's actually more to health and more to life. And you, when you go down the road of ignoring all the things that actually kill us, then they will get worse.
Boy, we're in a weird situation, aren't we? This has gone so weird.
It is really weird. If you had this conversation in 2019, it would seem ridiculous.
Yeah, gosh. I'm curious, you've worked for the World Health Organization, and you mentioned earlier that you know, people are paid to do things, but there must be more to it than that. Do they really feel like they're saving the world? What is the ultimate motivation, do you think?
It's a mix of, it's an organization of thousands of people. A lot of them are doing good jobs. I know countries in Southeast Asia, say, where, you know, the malaria program is essentially, was essentially run by the WHO for many years, and that saved a lot of people, a lot of children. It was a good thing, and they were working really hard and really long hours to do that. There are also hundreds of people who have been there for 30, 40 years, sitting in an office in Geneva, arranging meetings and writing reports, and they may have gotten in 40 years ago with great ideas to save the world, but now they're all about protecting the reputation of the WHO and doing whatever they're told, hanging out for the salary. And I think a large proportion of the people in WHO are like that. They are just now hanging out for the salary. It's hard. You know, there is, I think, fairly poor morale among a lot of people. They're not stupid. And a lot of people in WHO can see that the way the organization is acting now is not in the best interests of the rest of the world. So, you know, it's demoralizing if you work in that environment and you can see it. And especially if you haven't got the strength to then walk away, as I know people who have, but to walk away. And because you need the education allowance, or you need the healthcare, you need the salary, or you think you do, you need the holidays and the every second year the business class trip back to your home country, and the nice housing allowance. So you think you need all these things, so you get trapped in it. And I think a lot of people in these organisations become trapped in the organisation, so they don't really believe anymore in, you know, what they went in for. They're just doing a job and waiting to retire.
That must play on some consciences.
You would hope so.
You would, yeah.
You know, I've had people tap me on the shoulder and from WHO people and say, you know, gee, I really like that thing you wrote. What are you going to write next? But then they'll talk about, you know, hanging out for 2 more years to get their pension. And
yeah,
it's a pity when people put, you know, you have a low opinion of your own life in a way, I think, and your own worth if you end up doing that.
And the lives of others too, because you're ultimately throwing them under the bus.
Because, yeah, this does matter. I mean, WHO policy on COVID put well over 100 million additional people into severe food deprivation and poverty. It put up to 10 million girls into child marriage, which is, you know, nightly rape for children. You know, it's increased child labour. It's decimated a whole generation, condemned a whole generation to poverty in places like Uganda because the schools were closed for 2 years. Yeah, this was their doing. This is the cost of keeping quiet.
Did you see the woman who sang the song to Tedros?
Yeah, I did.
I thought that summed up the whole thing.
It did, yeah, I agree.
It was awful.
It was pretty bad. But
it was weird and awful.
It was also weird, and weird does sum it up. And yeah. I mean, she probably thought she was, I mean, you'd have to be pretty ignorant, but she probably thought, you know, it was all good.
It was just so strange. So to end on, have you any idea of, because I'm trying to think of here, you know, what's the timeline of this going to be? You know, when is it all going to, well, it may have started already, it probably has, but for our listeners that they're getting ready, it must be coming pretty soon, this whole thing.
There seems to be a lot of momentum. You know, it's really hard to say, but I would not be surprised if we have another pandemic declared this year.
Right.
The people who twisted reality in order to make money from COVID are the same people twisting reality again. And they did really well last time. So it's hard to see that they're not going to follow through on this fairly quickly, particularly because of politics and so on. I think there's a lot of incentives for them in the long term to get something happening again fairly soon. I hope that this is wrong. But I think, you know, people have to really watch with a lot of skepticism what is going on and remember that in 2019, we weren't actually all dying because of pandemics or even climate change or something like that, which is, yeah, I bring that up because it's part of the same issue. You know, viruses exist, but they're not an existential threat this year. And the climate changes, it's not an existential threat. The climate and health are really interesting because we only hear the story of climate is harmful to health. But logically, I mean, that's completely illogical. Climate must be good and bad to health, climate change. Mm. There's an awful lot of humans living in the tropics and, you know, far, far more people die every year from cold than from heat.
Yeah.
If you have more, we can, one of the reasons we can grow, we can feed 8 billion people is because CO2 is significantly higher and that accelerates plant growth. So we can grow more crops. And that's a fact, that's accepted. So, you know, the fact that we can feed perhaps 2-3 billion more people than we thought we could once, you would think that would be a real health positive.
I keep hearing there are too many people on the planet. We got to do something. That's still, people still banging away on that.
Yeah, but those people were still with us. So how does that work?
Yeah, well, that's what I think. Yeah. In fact, I think we could probably take more. If we wanted, if we organized ourselves.
And gee, wouldn't it be fun also if we had, you know, 1 billion people and there was always room at the beach and there was, you didn't get stuck in traffic jams. But it's all, people are not a pollution on the planet. People are, you know, each person is of, you know, infinite worth, actually, I think, as humans. And to treat people as if they're, and we are part of nature and what we do as humans is part of nature. It's the extent, you know, it's where evolution has taken life. It doesn't mean we go and pollute rivers and, you know, do stupid stuff, but we don't see ourselves as a pollutant either.
Yeah. Lock up your chickens. Can we just still hold out to that? Lock up your chickens, folks. They're coming.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Good to catch up with you again, David. Thank you so much for making a bit of time. And we're all sort of ready and waiting because it's, like I say, it's coming through our media now, more in Australia. But I guess we're expecting the same pattern to show itself here pretty soon as well. So
I suspect Australia really fall into it. I think in the US it'll be much harder. There's a lot more skepticism here.
So Trump won't be doing an Operation Warp Speed for bird flu.
I don't know. We'll see.
We'll have to find a new Fauci character in the play. Change him out.
Yeah. There's plenty lining up for that, I think. There's a lot of money in this. There's a lot of careers. It's fun in public health to do this. So a lot of people will do it, not because it's an existential threat, but they will say it is because it's, you know, the one thing COVID did also was push up a lot of egos. It's suddenly these people who were, you know, they spend their life looking at diarrhea outbreaks from some, you know, Mongolian restaurant. And suddenly they're on the news on CNN and so on, and it does a lot to your ego. So a lot of people want to keep that going as well.
Well, we had our Ashley Bloomfield, Director General of Health at the time. He was on TV, you know, running around in those little chains that humans do, you know, and singing and the ego inflation. You could just see it taking place in real time, you know.
Yes.
And then he got a knighthood.
Yeah.
I don't want one of them if that's what it involves.
I think Dan Andrews got something too. He got a reward for putting, you know, body-armoured black-clad policemen with visors on the streets in armoured cars and having them fire rubber bullets at people. It got him an Order of Australia or something.
Yeah, the equivalent to, because they don't have sirs and dames there, it's the equivalent though. But the lack of self-awareness is just mind-blowing, isn't it?
It is. It's amazing, yeah. It really is.
Wow. David Bell, thanks for coming back on RCR.
Thanks, Paul.
With your help, we can continue to fight for freedom. This is not possible without your generosity. Join our quest for the truth and our freedom. Simply visit www.realitycheck.radio/donate to make a difference today.